Welcome to
Tamarindo Podcast.
We are your hosts, Brenda Gonzalez
and Ana Sheila Victorino.
Tamarindo Podcast is the Latinx show where we discuss politics, pop culture,
and how to balance it all con calma.
Tamarindo is part of Luz Collective, a digital home for Latinas. You can catch all of our new episodes at luzcollective.com.
Welcome to the show. Woo! In this episode, we have a candid conversation on race and identity from our own point of view as Latinas in the U.S. But before that, we start off acknowledging the difficulty of 2020 and what may come ahead. Welcome back, Tamarindo listeners, to the latest episode. So I want to start us off by taking a deep breath.
I'm doing it too.
Let it out, y'all. We just want to acknowledge that we're in November and 2020 has been a crazy ass year.
Yes. Ooh,
difficult, like unexpected. You know, we've got the pandemic. We've got some tough losses in losing Kobe, Chadwick Boseman, RBG.
That was all this year?
That was all this year.
It's the longest year ever.
And then on top of that, you know, having a presidential election and dealing with all the shenanigans of the Trump administration and voter suppression and just like his nonsense, porquerias, like it's been rough.
Stop.
And we also want to acknowledge that we may not know who the winner is of this election by the time this episode comes out.
It's true. Yeah.
So, but we just want to like acknowledge all of the work that we have all been doing in terms of like staying as healthy as possible during 2020, you know, adjusting to everything that's been thrown at us. And also the work that all of y'all have done to have an impact on this election.
Yeah. Let's all take a collective moment to just thank ourselves. Thank you and thank everybody.
Yes.
This was rough.
This was rough. And be compassionate with yourself in terms of like what you did and didn't do. Porque ya pasó. You did what you could do. And the thing is, like, you know, regardless of whatever the outcome is, like our work is not done to create the world that we want to live in. ¿Verdad? And so we have to prepare for whatever may come. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know regardless of the outcome, we don't know what post-election world is going to look like. So we have to really prioritize self and community care. Like that's got to be so important for us because I think it's going to be, you know, regardless, even that day is going to be, there's going to be a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. That. And so we really need to make sure that we prioritize that. And so we just wanted to touch on a few things that we might be able to do. Which y'all might be able to do. And we all need different things, ¿verdad? But one thing is know when to turn off. First thing is know when to turn off your TV, your social media. You know, don't keep reading the same type of articles over and over again. Like pay attention to how you're feeling in your body and know when things are actually starting to really affect you physically. And I think we can all kind of get caught up in the social spiral of doom, or I think you called it something else the other day, Brenda,
but just like
the doom scroll. Exactly. Like know when to turn it off, know when to take a break, regardless of what happens, ¿verdad? Number two, think about like prepare yourself for what this week is going to look like. Are there things that you can do to lighten your load a little bit? So like, can you take a day off? Can you have stronger boundaries? I think Brenda is like really great actually at setting boundaries and saying when she's going to do something and when she's not.
I hope so.
So just know, like, can you create some boundaries to protect your energy and maybe have less commitments for the week if you know that this is going to be a tough week for you? Is to spend more time outdoors. Brenda and I both love spending time outdoors and it's so important for my mental health. So if it's something that really helps you, like prioritize getting outside safely,
yes.
Of course.
Go on a walk, please. I can't stress that enough because I go on hikes as much as I can, as much as possible. My friends say, I wish I could bottle a little bit of your energy. Let me tell you, energy begets energy. If you get your ass out there, you're going to want to be out there longer. It's hard. I know it, but really just make the time. If it's walking around the block,
just get yourself
out
there.
Much better.
Yes. Yes. So one thing when I'm having a hard time doing something, I try to think about how it's going to feel after I do that activity. And that really helps me actually do it.
Yes.
And I
think you'll feel so grateful.
Yeah. And taking walks has been like transformational for me. And it's something that I started really doing during COVID. I started doing morning and evening walks, and sometimes I've been better than other times, but every time I do it, it's like, I'm not even thinking about like, oh, getting that workout in. It's more just like getting outside and going on a walk. And it's so good for like my clarity, my mood, toda la cosa.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love
that. Okay. And last is like read or listen to things that bring you joy. So whether it's podcasts or books, like, you know when you need to stop listening to a political podcasts. Know when we can put some of our happier episodes in the show notes for y'all, but do things that will listen and read things that will bring you joy if you're really having a hard time with the week.
Yeah, I have personal experience with that, because even though we talk about politics often on this podcast, I actually have stopped listening to other political podcasts.
Ones that are like strictly political?
Yeah, I'll recommend a few because they're magical. I love the Risk podcast, which is all storytelling. Very wonderful, very uplifting. I also love Mortified, also storytelling podcast about people reading their journal entries. Hilarious.
Yes.
So I find ways to disconnect. So we love podcasts and we love creating this political podcast. But if you need to take a break, take a break.
Yes. And we also know that obviously we've been spending more time on politics and talking about the election because it's been so important. But, you know, like we'll definitely kind of be mixing it in we'll obviously always be talking about politics, but we want to make sure it is a balanced podcast so that we make sure that we take care of ourselves as well.
We bring you so much here.
Yeah.
So that we're starting off with this calma for everyone.
So we just want to honor everybody for just getting through 2020. Like I feel like Latinos especially, we're so resilient because we've had to like deal with so much shit just like in our lives, and like we had to like use that resiliency this year. So I just want to honor everybody for wherever you are, like, you know, it's wherever you are is perfect and it's okay, and we thank y'all.
Yeah, we thank y'all. So with that, we're gonna take a really short break and then we will be back with the rest of the conversation. Friends, we are so thrilled to be part of Luz Collective, which is a digital home for Latinas by Latinas. Luz Collective exists to tell true and accurate narratives of Latinas in the U.S. through great storytelling, articles, and podcasts like ours.
As an independent media company founded by Latinas, articles published at luzcollective.com reflect our lived experience as women who live in the hyphen, like Mexican-American or ni de aquí ni de allá.
That's right. We want to invite you to visit luzcollective.com to read articles by us and for us. You can read Miriam Gurba's regular column, her latest work masterly cuts at the argument of the quote-unquote accidental assault, as she reacts to the recent incident where a New York Times staffer exposed himself during an infamous Zoom call. Ugh.
We love Medium's cutting prose and unmatched wit. We also liked reading about how Latinas are fighting disinformation and a history of voter suppression in Florida.
The writers and editors at Luz Collective get paid for their work because Luz Collective refuses to be part of the media culture that devalues the intellectual labor of Latinas and BIPOC writers.
Yes, pero we need your help. Please go to luzcollective.com and click on Support Us to join the Luz Collective supporter network. We want to encourage you to give $12.50 a month to join as an Alpha Latina supporter so Luz Collective can keep telling our stories.
Go to the link in our show notes or go to luzcollective.com and click Support Us to read about the levels of giving and perks. Once again, that's luzcollective.com and then click on Support Us. When you support Luz Collective, you're supporting us. So yeah. Do it now. Woo-hoo! Okay, so we're back from that break. And right now, today's episode, we want to talk about race, which is always a difficult conversation and a difficult thing to navigate. But really what sparked this specific episode is that we both listened to another podcast that we absolutely love. It's called NPR Code Switch. And they recently did an episode all around the term BIPOC. So we wanted to dive into that. We'll explain what that term is if it's new to you. But before we go into that, we do want to acknowledge that conversations on race are always messy. They're never crystal clear. There's always a lot of nuance. And this has and always has been an opinion podcast. So Ana Sheila and I, whatever we tell you here, this is our own conversation, our own candid conversation that we're inviting you to listen in on. We're not scientists, we're not experts, but we're going to reference some important people that as we have this conversation. But just a note, this is, has always been an opinion podcast. And so a little bit more on why conversations on race can be messy. Here is what Angela Onwuachi-Willig, a professor of law at the University of Iowa, says. She says, quote, race is not biological. It is a social construct. There is no gene or cluster of genes common to all Black or all white. Were race real, quote unquote, in the genetic sense, racial classifications for individuals would remain constant across boundaries. Yet a person who could be categorized as Black in the United States might be considered white in Brazil or colored in South Africa. So this is just an example to underscore how these things could be very, very messy and gray. So why don't we start off by telling folks, what does BIPOC mean?
Yes, it means Black Indigenous Person of Color, and it expands on the widely used term POC, people of color. So, and although it can be traced to several years ago, it really started taking off, especially this summer, in response to the continued disregard for Black lives and also as a further reflection on the erasure of Indigenous identities. On the NPR Code Switch podcast, a woman named Amber Starks, who identified as Afro-Indigenous, states, we have to be honest that there is a hierarchy, like who is more proximate to whiteness and who isn't. And that's part of what the term BIPOC aims to address. It centers certain communities that have been historically the most oppressed, yes. Black and Indigenous specifically.
Exactly. So for today's episode, you and I, Anna Sheila and Brenda, we're both Mexican immigrants to the U.S. That's the lens that we're providing, mm-hmm. as Latinas, as Latinx. We want to take this discussion, this NPR Code Switch podcast that we keep referencing as a starting point, but really reflect our own point of view as it relates to Latinx in the U.S. So kind of reflecting on that, what do you think about the term BIPOC?
Yeah, well, I love the episode and I thought it was, you know, great. It was a great reflection for me and I was thinking about it and I really like it. I think I see it as an additional term that can be really powerful, especially in certain contexts. And I think it's powerful in its ability to address the limitations that I see in the term person of color that has started to be used so broadly that in some cases it has, you know, not highlighted Black people, Indigenous people enough. And there is, particularly in the Code Switch episode, I do want to reference one thing. There was an anecdote where there was a teacher of South Asian descent who was planning, you know, with some white colleagues to teach a particular book. The book is called The Hate U Give, which is a book about anti-Blackness. And she said that previously she really loved that term, but she had an experience where during this planning session,
and
one
by
of her,
that term, you mean POC?
POC, yes, thank you. One of her white colleagues said, okay, great. We can teach this novel now because we have our POC.
Oh, like you know, they got their, even right. though this novel
so she
about
was basically Black.
People,
yeah, she's
she
not,
like, oh, she counts.
Right. So she was now like being tokenized as a person of color when she is not Black and she cannot speak to Black experience. And that is like what some people are seeing is limited, is why the term POC can be limiting in its effectiveness, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
And so, you know, and I think it's super important. I very much agree with centering the communities of color that are most oppressed, most erased. And 100%, we are not all oppressed in the same way. And I do think that our proximity to whiteness has so much to do with that. You know, I also do want to know, I respect that there are some people that don't want to use that term, that don't even want to use, you know, POC. They don't want to use BIPOC or POC because they feel like they always want to identify as Black or Indigenous or Mexicana or whatever it may be. And I totally get that. And I think that, you know, the reason I see it as potentially powerful in some contexts is because sometimes it does help us be better activists. Like it gives us, we can all unite against, you know, the bigger oppressor. And so I think it can be helpful in that way. And sometimes it helps us better empathize with the struggles of different communities of color to use terms like POC or BIPOC, you know,
mm-hmm. to specifically call that out. I see. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Y que más? One thing I want to kind of focus on is the I in BIPOC, right?
Okay.
The Indigenous part. And I want to note that, you know, as both of us, we're both Mexican. We both, I believe, have mixed European and Indigenous ancestry. And I think most Mexicans, and I'm speaking, you know, with my experience and what I believe, but I've grown up not knowing very much about my Indigenous ancestry. I know that I have it, but I felt like in a way I was taught to sort of erase that part of me. My whole life I grew up, you know, elevating my European ancestry.
Right.
Like that's what
we're
I saw.
Super Catholic, for example.
That's what I, right? Yeah. And that's, we're all a Catholic. That's what I saw on TV when I saw just white Mexicans on Televisa and Univision. That's what I was like told. And so, and I remember growing up with my classmates and just, you know, we would like sort of celebrate, oh yeah, like my, this family member who is white passing or has, you know, light colored eyes. And even
nobody would say wet white passing though, right? They would say,
no.
Oh, she's French.
Or yeah. Like, or you say, no, que mi familia, like, oh yeah, mi hermano or whatever is güerita, or like, tenemos ojos azules.
Well, and it was a baby's born. They're like, oh, mira.
Oh, yeah. He's güerito. So cute if he's white. Right. And so we grew up thinking that like the white whiteness in us, like our white ancestry, was to be celebrated and the rest was erased. So for me, I really like elevating the indigenous, the I and BIPOC, because I feel like as Mexicans, we grew up erasing that and suppressing it and, you know, looking down on it. And I even remember growing up, like I, you know, we were tall, my family's tall. And like,
yes,
and
that, if anybody sees any pictures of us together, yes, you could tell she's like three heads taller than
me. I'm pretty tall, you know, for a Mexican especially. But I grew up like sort of como like, you know, boasting that, my family boasting that, because, and I realized that the reason I was boasting it is because it felt like a part of like this European ancestry. Like the tallness in our family comes from that European heritage. And just reflecting on like how shitty that is, that like this was something that I internalized and I grew up with.
Yeah. I mean, you know? It's standards of beauty. You don't have any short models. Well, models are super tall and they have European phenotypes. It's global. It's a global perception of standards of beauty are tall, blonde, Barbie, you know?
Right. And so like, you know, my lived experience, like I don't feel right calling myself indigenous because that's not how I've lived my whole life. In the same way that I would never call myself white because like, I don't look white. Like I don't feel white. Like that's never been my lived experience, but it's like, but how can I honor, I've been thinking about how I can honor that indigenous ancestry more. And one of the ways I feel like is by honoring just indigenous people more, by elevating them more, by centering them more. And there's a bunch of other things that I've been thinking about, like, you know, and like in how I eat, like decolonizing, like just the way that I eat, like our indigenous ancestors, like they weren't really eating a lot of the things that we eat now. So I've been thinking about that just really in like the way that I connect with the earth more, thinking about like, and I'd love to just kind of keep exploring that more.
Yeah, and those are great reflections. No, I think that's fantastic.
What are some, you know, like on some reflections and thoughts that you have, Brenda?
Yeah, well, we were researching for this conversation, I listened to a conversation between the writer Julissa Arce when she had this conversation with UCLA professor Laura Gomez. And this Laura Gomez, she is the author of Manifest Destinies, The Making of the Mexican-American Race, which I absolutely have to read now. So Dr. Gomez, she talks about mestizaje, which is, which she says comes from this post-revolutionary Mexico, where we were trying to build this national identity. And it might have had these nice altruistic goals of like, we're this mestizaje people, these, you know, we should celebrate this. But it actually ended up having the effect of pressing down against Afro-Mexicano and indigenous people, something that, of course, spread across Latin America, this thinking. And so she believes that while we're making some progress in increasing visibility of Black and indigenous Latinx people, we really have, we have not yet fully confronted our anti-Black and anti-indigenous racism in our own communities. And I bring this up because it's important to understand this context as the backdrop to conversations on race. When we talk about race as Latinos, when it comes to his experience as Latinos and more specifically as Mexicans in the U.S., something else that Gomez says is that 70% of Latinos in the U.S. are Mexican Americans or of Mexican descent. So while we know that there's a diverse type of Latinos in the U.S., most of us are Mexicans. And so I think that context of mestizaje is an important context, especially for you and I, who truly are Mexicans, to have that conversation.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting because I think for I don't know about you, but I didn't really grow up thinking about like my mestizaje. Like I just thought of myself as Mexican. So it's really interesting to read about this and see these, these reflections about like how even mestizaje was sort of erasing true indigenous and Afro identity because it wasn't the majority identity. So the majority identity ended up being what was like, what would you call it? Just like Mex.
No this hodgepodge, like, this mestizaje, like celebrating the mixedness, but in doing so.
Right.
maybe not intentionally, or perhaps probably very intentionally, erasing the indigenous and the Black ancestry.
Yeah.
But what this is bringing up for me is when I would go to Mexico, I go to Mexico and I visit, the way that I experience walking around in Mexico, and for people that don't know what I look like, I am a light-skinned Mexican woman. I'm short. I have blue eyes. And not only that, but so I navigate this world. I know that I navigate the world very differently than someone that presents very indigenous. So I acknowledge that. And I acknowledge my privilege and my proximity to whiteness by default, by the way I look. But not only that, but I also kind of, whenever I'm in Mexico, I always experience or I feel this duality of like, there's Mexicans and there's indigenous people and there's a separation.
Mm.
That's the way that the framing that I see in Mexico. And probably it's part of what you were describing of the images that we see. We see the telenovelas, the Televisa, the every single commercial, the stock photos are all white passing European phenotype Latinos. Mm-hmm. So that's all kind of reinforces this separation that we see. But luckily, as Gomez says, I think that we are making some progress. And I think even Mexico is having these confrontations with their own racism and having these conversations. So I think that's good. I think that's all a positive sign that we're confronting it. And to kind of bring this back to what we started with BIPOC.
Yeah.
Is yes, I 100% agree with everything you said that it's important to specifically call out Black and Indigenous for that reason, because it's been erased previously. So to literally boldly say Black and Indigenous person of color.
Right.
It's very important because it tries to avoid the erasure of Black and Indigenous people when you only have people of color.
Right. And I think that's like actually been one of the what some of the issues people have had was the term Latinx, as like it feeling like it is not centering enough of Indigenous and Afro-Latinx.
Yeah, it's very identities. Complicated. I do want to quote this person, this Latina that was quoted on Code Switch. So she says, I'm Latinx, Puerto Rican and Colombian, and I like the term POC and BIPOC or BIPOC. And I don't know what she calls them, but I like to say BIPOC. I heard it's BIPOC. Who knows how you say it? Both ways. And she says here, she likes it because it means solidarity among our collective experiences as non-whites, especially our experience as non-whites in the U.S., the United States. There's obviously a lot of variation within those experiences. I just wish these terms were used more often to mean this coalition and not as a euphemism, like the way diverse is often used, especially by people, mostly white people, who don't want to say Black. So we know, and this is referenced in the episode 2 on Code Switch, that even BIPOC is becoming to be, it's on its way to become a euphemism. It's on its way to get diluted because language is complex. And I want to encourage people to listen to this episode of Code Switch that we keep referencing, which we'll put in our show notes, because they do start out talking with a linguistics. How do you call those people that are professionals in linguistics? Oh, I forget what you call them. But the point is that language is always evolving, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why Latinx is all complicated. Anywho, but the most important point there is, again, that she really, this is important context to talk about this as non-whites in the United States.
Right.
And something that I think is interesting, I do like it because I like grouping us as non-whites. And that's truly what we mean. When we say BIPOC, we mean boldly Black and Indigenous, yes. But we also just mean non-white. We also mean non-white. And I like that. But I've also been uneasy in situations where, I'll give you an example. There's a theater company that we like a lot that used to have an event where it was only women of color that would be able to speak at this event. There were the people, but it also feels uncomfortable. I mean, I understand the need to have these protective spaces for women of color to speak and tell their stories, because the default is white women typically.
Right.
But when you kind of go a little further, I mean, it's also alienating. Like, you're non-white people can't speak here.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these things are just very, very complicated. And we're not going to solve racism on this episode. We're just here to have a conversation on some of our thoughts. But I do want to, again, because we wanted to kind of talk about this in terms of our experience as Latinx people in the U.S., And we just had an election. By the time you're listening to this, we just had an election. And there's been a lot of conversation. There's always a lot of conversations about the Latinx vote.
Yeah.
And it's always complicated because we are not a monolith.
Right.
We are so diverse. There's Black people. There's white people. There's Indigenous people. There's different nationalities. Mm-hmm. There's different levels of English proficiency, whether you're an immigrant or not.
Yeah. Generation.
It's so complex, right? We are not a monolith. And here's a perfect example. So this is from a quote from Gerardo Cardava, who's a professor at Northwestern University. So he says, quote, California has the largest number of eligible Latino voters, 8 million. Recent polls have shown that Donald Trump is earning somewhere between 25% to 30% of their support. That means that if all of those 8 million eligible voters vote, more than 2 million voters in California, this is the state of Prop 187, the state where the Republican Party is dead, there will be more than 2 million Latinos who vote for Donald Trump.
Mm.
Compare that to Florida, which we all in our notion of our head is like conservatives, Florida, mm-hmm. Cubans. Florida, which has 3.1 million Latino eligible voters, in 2016, 35% of Latinos in Florida voted for Trump. That's around 1 million. And if this holds true for 2020, there will be more Latinos who voted for Donald Trump in California than in the state of Florida. So let me repeat that again. It could be the case that more Latinos will vote for Trump in California than in Florida. So this just kind of speaks to the diversity within our group. Like there is so much, we are not a monolith. And part of this complexity, I think, is represented in how we view words mm-hmm. like BIPOC.
Right.
There's a lot of Latinos that want to celebrate their proximity to whiteness.
Right. They will continue to do so. That is like the goal. Those are goals for them, whether they acknowledge it or not.
Yeah. Like, and some of them are white, like they physically look white.
Right.
and it's all very fascinating. Something else that I've observed is like, are we going to become Italians? Like, and let me break
Tell
that
me
down.
About that. What you mean
so
by that?
There was a time, and a lot of this is reflected in Hollywood, like say, for example, Karate Kid, right? Karate Kid has this Italian American kid who doesn't look like his white peers, right? He's a brown person, he's Italian, but he's tan, he's got brown hair, and he's Catholic. And Italians at some point were very much othered, but mm-hmm. now people think of Italians as white.
Mm-hmm.
So are Latinos on our way, like after several generations
right.
of becoming Italian Americans, aka white?
Mm-hmm.
These are all things that just like I don't have the answer, but they're thoughts that always percolate for me as I reflect on discussions on race.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, so interesting. I don't even know what to say there. What else to add there?
all to say is that as we started off earlier, these conversations are never easy. But you know what I want to reference?
Yeah.
And we have a couple minutes now. But the part of the other reason why we wanted to have this podcast is recently, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus has been, which is great, right? This is all part of the solution here, has been adamant and vocal about Latinx representation in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a problem. We reference it here on this podcast many times because when we are not seen on television and the way we're seen, because again, it kind of goes back to whatever's happening in Televisa is also happening in Hollywood. If we only show white looking Latinos, or if we only show Latinos in a certain way or not at all, that all informs our context, right? The American context of what they think of Latinos. And when we're not seen, it makes it easier for people like Trump to pass policies or to have a whole freaking 4 years, potentially 8 years, all by vilifying Latinos. Like mm-hmm. it's all interconnected. We know that's very
right.
important. Anyways, back to our what happened with us on Tamarindo. We posted a tweet of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus calling for a hearing all about this issue about bringing more Latinx representation in Hollywood, which we think is an important issue for the reasons that I just said. One person commented that basically said, hey, we should celebrate that Black people are getting represented. Like, you're out of line for wanting more Latinos to be represented. We need more Black people to be represented. That was kind of her point. I decided not to argue because, like, I think she was not seeing truly what we were intending by posting this post. But some people did chime in, like, no, you can be both. You can both want to celebrate Black representation in media and also acknowledge that we need to have more Latinx representation in media. You can
including
do both.
Black Latinx including, representation.
By the way, yes, by the way, Black people can be Latinx too. Yes, that's another point. That is one point that I did respond with. But I think too, there was this kind of, in the thread, there was this discussion about what kind of Latinos too. Mm-hmm. And I think someone said, like, I think she called America Ferrera as an example of white Latinx. And that's mm-hmm. just not accurate. Like, you look at America Ferrera, who is of, I believe she's Guatemalan or Honduran. She's from, her family's from Honduras. She does not look like Kate del Castillo. Kate del Castillo is a white Mexican, like a white Latino. Mm-hmm. America Ferrera is not. And so I wanted to correct this person and saying, I don't know if I would ever say America Ferrera as an example of white Latinx. To me, she presents indigenous. And you had a difference of opinion because you're like, well, not totally. And that is a perfect example of why this is so complex. Yeah, because yeah. there's colonization. We have different degrees of mm-hmm. of what we look like. Marcela Arguello, who I absolutely fucking love. She's 6'11" or whatever, however tall she is.
Taller than me. So that yes. tells you I'm
and
tall, y'all.
Yes, she's Salvadorian.
Yeah,
she's
right.
And she's got a fabulous joke. You all should listen to her comedy special, which you can get anywhere. And it's hilarious. But she talks about, like, I'm a product of colonization.
Yeah,
like, man. You don't know what I am. I'm freaking super tall. You don't think that I'm Latina, but we look in various different ways. And it's all because of this history of oppression and colonization that some of us are so colonized that we're happy to be super Catholic, even though that was colonized, that right. was instilled in us through colonization.
Right, right, right.
It's all very fascinating.
So what's our takeaway here?
Our takeaway is that whenever we can, I think it's good to acknowledge our privilege. Our
yes, takeaway there is go. That, I love that takeaway.
Yeah, our takeaway is we can navigate this world and acknowledge our privilege. We can yes. try whenever we can to center those that have been oppressed as much as we can. So, as we mentioned earlier, we're part of Luz Collective, yes. and at Luz Collective are very intentional of trying to find BIPOC writers. Like yeah. We don't want just white Latinas to be telling their stories. I got to say one more thing, and sorry that I'm ranting, but that's just what happens. I also have, and I'm not going to go into it here because we probably need a whole other episode about this, but I also think I'm not white. Like, even though I have proximity to whiteness and I acknowledge my privilege as a confusing looking Latino, where you don't know what kind of race is to be with me, I think it's inaccurate to say that we're all that because you look white, you are white mm-hmm. as a Latina, as a Latinx person. Because, for example, mm-hmm. my mom has blonde hair and green eyes, and that comes with a lot of privilege, but she has an accent and she had to learn English, and right. there's still a difference.
Right,
and,
right, right, yeah. right. Like, there's her experience, even though she's, you know, whatever color white passing, has still been mostly very Mexican in a lot of ways compared to white Mexicans, meaning like they've lived here for generations, right? There's a difference there too. And you're right. Like, we could totally go in on that as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of room for nuance. And the other thing, here's one more thing. I'm an advocate for bringing back WASP. Why don't we call people WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant? Let's be specific. I also have a problem with just white as a broad term, because again, like I talked, you know, something else that was mentioned in the podcast a lot in Code Switch is that maybe we should just call people what they are. Let's just get specific and not group people.
Yeah. But then the reason, like, why we, you know, bringing back to like the point I made, why I think these terms are important, is because there are times and contexts in which our collective power is really important yeah. in amplifying our impact against like a larger oppressive forces.
Yeah. Right. I want to lean into something you said. There's a time and a place. Like, it's all
right,
about the context.
Right, 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 right. One other takeaway that I want to add for this conversation is like checking our own, and we've mentioned this before, checking our own internalized racism, colorism, bias. And just because we are, you know, Latinos or people of color, are BIPOC, that does not mean that we have not internalized all of these things and we're not operating from these places from time to time. Like, we constantly have to check ourselves.
Yeah, that's why there's 2 million, potentially 2 million Latinos voting for Trump in California. Right. Because they don't realize that
right.
Trump doesn't give a shit that right. you, about your support if right. you look a certain way. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very complicated. So now what? We just want to leave you with some resources.
Yeah. So what you got? You got something?
Yeah. We're going to obviously reference the Code Switch episode in our show notes. But,
yes.
But specifically for homework, I'm going to have you all, and I'll put this link also in our show notes. But the conversation with Julissa Arce and Professor Gomez, which we're going to put the link there, but you can watch the whole conversation. It's very fascinating. Okay, another resource that I want to recommend for folks is The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of America's Great Migration. So this is I think it's a must-read book. It's by Isabel Wilkerson. And I think it's just, what I like about it is that I think it's just very informative about the Black experience in the U.S. It's a history book, but the way she tells the story is also through three fictional characters, which is helpful for those of us that like fiction. Mm-hmm. So it's historical context, but then great storytelling. And it's about the migration of Black people from the South moving up to the North and to the West. And why I recommend it is because there's also a lot of parallels to our experience as immigrants from Latin America, because the way that the already established Black people in the North treated these Southerners is very much the way that these Trump supporters are treating immigrants, newly arrived immigrants from Mexico. Right. So there's a lot of parallels to that. So I want to recommend those two things.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, we're leaving you with some homework.
Yes. And you know what? I think we'll probably come back to, you know, some of these issues that we talked on today and in future episodes.
Yes,
I think for
this
sure.
is a forever topic. Like yes. this is what Tamarindo is about. It's about our identity yes. and navigating it. And like we mentioned earlier, this is an opinion podcast. You're yeah. getting Brenda and Sheila's opinion.
You know? And you know, and our opinions are evolving as well as we continue learning.
Woo! All right, so we're back. That was Let's do another breathe in, breathe out, heavy conversation.
Stretching over here. Yeah.
So like we always like to do, we want to leave you with a matraca and a basura. You got our calma at the front end of this episode.
Yes.
So, Ana Sheila, you got a matraca?
Yeah, matraca. I just want to give a matraca to everybody that's been fighting. Oh, here we go. Voter suppression throughout this election. Specifically, I want to call out, and I know when we have this episode, it'll, you know, the election will be over, but I just want to honor those people that have been doing the work. Specifically, I just want to give a quick matraca to Chris Hollins. He's a county clerk and chief elections officer of Harris County in Texas. He just came up with a lot of really creative ways to just, you know, get the vote. He introduced drive-through voting and, you know, considering everything with COVID-19. And he actually set a new all-time turnout record because he had a 24-hour drive-through like voting session. So just really, you know, beautiful to see the work that people are doing out there.
Yeah, why not celebrate people wanting to vote?
Right, exactly. It's like we.
Why wouldn't you want people to don't do the like, basic
I think,
thing?
Right, like I just think vote. That like doing the work to make it as easy as possible for everybody to get to vote, like why? I don't see anything wrong with that. And of course, there have been Republicans trying to invalidate those votes.
Of course. So matraca, I double down on that matraca. Matraca to anybody that wants to help people vote.
Yes. All right. So what else you got? You got a basura for us?
Yeah, I want to put in la basura, speaking of Latinos for Trump, is Chingo Bling. Look him up. He's someone that has profited from his identity and doing fun Chicano rap, and he's funny and a comedian, but all of a sudden he's now a Trump sympathizer. And so anybody who profits from this Mexican American identity and then turns around and sells out his community goes in la basura.
All right.
What about you?
All right. Well, I've got two, but I'll start with one and we have time. We'll do the other one. I want to put talking about people's age so much in La Basura.
Oh.
Like constantly, like in articles, like people always know, like such and such, comma, age, comma, or like people always asking, like, how old you are. And I just feel like there's no, whenever you share your age, like there's always some kind of some judgment attached to that age, whether it's positive or there is negative, there's always some kind of judgment, whether it's like about your physical appearance, like, oh, this person looks really great for this age. Oh, this person looks kind of older. Like, oh, like I expect, cause we can't help it, but we have pictures of what people are supposed to look like, what they're supposed to do at a certain age. And I just feel like it would just be so great if we could let go of that, because we all have so much shame. I think there's so many people that have so much shame around their age and where they think they should be at this age or what they should be doing, et cetera. And if we could somehow, it's, I know it's incredibly difficult, like let go of talking about it so much, like I think people would just be able to live their lives a little bit better, like doing what they want to do when they want to do it, rather than thinking, oh, like by this age, I need to do this X, Y, and Z, or I should look like this, or et cetera, you know? So that's what I want to put in the basura.
Yeah, that's a good one. Definitely. Do whatever you want, whenever you want. Haz lo que te haga la gana cuando quieras.
Cuando quieras. So, you know, like I would love to see more of that. And the other thing I put in the basura, just the hypocrisy. And if y'all haven't noticed, this is not a Republican friendly podcast.
Yes, this isn't for you. Just in if case you're Republican, it, yeah, like, ciao.
The hypocrisy from Republicans, and you know, thinking about like one thing is like the Supreme Court nomination. Like I think in 2016, you know, Obama had a nomination, and the Republicans just let it sit because they said that like they, you know, they should not vote on a nominee in an election year. And correct me if the situations are different at all. I'm not sure, but from what I've seen, it was exact. It's very similar.
Well, like even actually, worse case, it was because earlier. We're so much closer was, to yeah, the election.
Exactly. And like he actually, I think it was in March or April or something like this, not in, you know, October or whatever. Yeah, whenever
days
this started
before the election, the Republicans.
Right. And so it's like they literally like presented. They basically said it wasn't right to, you know, have to push
it's
forward a nominee in an election
hypocrisy.
Year.
Yeah.
So that and another thing that really pisses me off are like religious conservatives that somehow say that like the Republican Party is the party of God, because I feel like if you really think about Jesus's teachings, they were about serving the poor, welcoming the immigrant, but like they've basically chosen to pick on two things, you know, that have to do with somebody else's life, right? Like I'm talking about LGBT rights, and I'm talking about like the right to choose what to do with your body. Like those are the two things you're choosing to do that have to do that don't have to do with you. They have to do with other people. But like in terms of you're choosing to be, those are the things that like determine that this is like, you know, the party of God. And then to follow someone like Trump, which to me is like is the least
the
least spiritual man, like fully like egotistical, narcissistic. Like,
yeah, it's like, such a mess. It's a, they are such a mess. And also what's another reason why there's Latinos for Trump, because they're single issue voters and it's abortion
and it's like that shit is just like it's just a mask. You're using religion to mask your homophobia and you know what and other things. So yeah. Anyways,
basura, we're into it. All right, y'all, I hope that you enjoyed this episode.
Wait, I want to give
more?
Another calma real quick.
Oh, okay,
you
we
know
more
because
calma.
let's end the episode.
Fine, let's
so
tell us
Halloween just passed, and I just want to like my calma is just seeing people like that still, even though this Halloween was obviously very different for people, that still dressed up and like did their thing. Brenda, you did your thing on the gram. I didn't dress up this year, so it was really nice for me to see how other people dressed up and still honor this holiday, which I think is like a great holiday for so many
it
reasons.
It sure is. I love Halloween.
So next year
safely.
For sure, I'm going to do it next year. So I'm going to come out with a kick-ass costume next year.
But I love it.
Thank you for everybody that dressed up and brought joy to me and so many others with your
yes.
costumes.
Gotta end it on a positive note.
Yes.
Bueno, everyone, hasta luego. Ponte un suéter.
Cálmate o te calmo.
Yeah.
Tamarindo Podcast is independently produced by Ana Sheila Victorino and Brenda Gonzalez. Jeff DeVoe provides original music and sound engineering, and Michelle Andrade provides editing and production support.
Follow us on Instagram at Tamarindo Podcast and at Twitter at Tamarindo Cast. And if you like the show, please write us a review on Apple Podcasts or share the episode with a friend. Get in touch with us at tamarindopodcast.com.
Cuando mi arrendador dijo que el alquiler podría ser más barato si fuéramos amigos con beneficios. Había oído hablar de acoso sexual en el lugar de trabajo, pero en mi casa, eso es discriminación en la vivienda basada en el sexo.
La gente de Bienes Raíces dijo que estaríamos más cómodos viviendo en un vecindario diferente con gente como nosotros. Por suerte, conocíamos nuestros derechos. Es ilegal asustar a los posibles propietarios para que se alejen de ciertos vecindarios en función de raza o nacionalidad.
Si usted cree que sufrió discriminación o tiene preguntas sobre sus derechos, comuníquese con Fair Housing Foundation, Fundación de Vivienda Justa, al 800-446-3247 o también en línea en fhfca.org. La vivienda justa es su derecho. Este es un anuncio de servicio público de Fair Housing Foundation y respaldado por el Departamento de Vivienda y Desarrollo Urbano HUD bajo la subvención de FIPPI, FPEI 220099.
Saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.